Hello everyone. Welcome to the first BPSA podcast, we hope one of many to come. Today's session will focus on financial privacy and features a number of distinguished guests from the sector. Firstly, for those of you not familiar with the BPSA, it is an acronym that stands for the Blockchain Privacy Security and Adoption Alliance. It is a non-profit organization that aims to educate the public on privacy and security solutions in blockchain. It is also a think tank that facilitates a common forum for developers to create open source privacy and security technologies for public use. The BPSA currently has 9 members, and it's an ever-expanding alliance with nearly 500,000 followers across all social media. We are honored today to kick things off with a special guest and well-known privacy advocate, Ruben Yap from the FIRO project, previously known as Zcoin. He oversees strategy and operations for FIRO. And also, Ruben has been a vocal advocate of online and financial privacy since 2007. Here with us, we also have Draith, president of the BPSAA and captain of Pirate Chain, Kushti, project head from Ergo, Wookie, vice president of the BPSAA and Pirate Chain fleet commander, and Hashrates, who is responsible for marketing of the Ethel Protocol project. I'm your host, Dream Team, VP of Marketing for the BPSA. So, welcome everybody. Welcome, Ruben.
Yeah, thanks.
Hey, glad to be on.
So,
hey, to kick, glad to be on today.
Hey there. So, to kick things off, let's start with defining for the people listening to us what is financial privacy. Ruben, do you want to sort of set the mark?
No, on? I'll let someone else take that.
Wookie?
Oh, okay. Well, if no one's going to say anything, I guess I will define it then. I mean, financial privacy is pretty self-explanatory. Like, you know, how we all understand what data privacy is. Like, you know, we don't want... It's the ability to make sure that our personal data is... We have the right to choose who to expose it to rather than everyone taking a look at our stuff. Similarly, with financial privacy, it's basically privacy over our financial matters. And that's really it. It's like, you know, I don't want anyone knowing how much I earn, what I'm spending on. And these are very like intimate, one of the most intimate things about our lives, right? Because, you know, as they say, money makes the world go round. And just by looking at someone's financial history or the like privacy, like all the his expenditure, how much he earns, you get a very, very good picture of who this person is. And it also may put certain people at risk, right? Like maybe you are receiving payouts, you know, you're relying on certain payouts from a certain organization, and you're revealing your connections to that organization. Or maybe I'm really, really rich and I don't want people to know that because, you know, that makes me a target. So I think financial privacy is pretty self-explanatory, but yeah, I'll let anyone else who wants to add to that.
Well, thank you for that. That was very informative. I think within that introduction, we kind of sort of covered, you know, why financial privacy is important. But does anybody want to touch on, you know, why financial privacy is particularly important when it comes to blockchain?
Hey, it's Hashrates here. I'll chime in real quick. The issue with financial privacy and the challenge we face at the BPSAA and also all crypto users is it's absolutely at odds with every single government on the planet. You know, they're interested in knowing exactly every transaction you have, every yen, every dollar, every euro, and they equate financial privacy to basically terrorism, or they equate it to bad actors. And that's not the case, but that's certainly the umbrella that they use, at least in my opinion, to try to chip away at financial privacy. And as I was joking earlier on, you know, the Chinese are launching the digital renminbi, and when the RMB goes digitally, you know, they'll be able to track every penny that you have in your wallet at all times. There will be no financial privacy, even though it's going to be some type of cryptocurrency or blockchain based. So absolutely at odds with what I think everybody would like to have. And as Ruben put out, talking about just, you know, for personal safety and other issues. You know, there's even talks about people being mugged for their Bitcoin keys, and traders, Bitcoin traders are very vocal people, you know, being robbed. So it's an interesting balance that I think we all face, you know, is our financial privacy, but yet, you know, authoritarian governments using a false bravado to try to go after that. And it's going to be a challenging space as we go forward.
Okay, so I'm going to hop in now also. This is Wookie. So I like to think of it in sort of a longer time frame, right? I think in all of, I would say all of humanity, there really hasn't been an issue about thinking of about financial privacy, right? Because it's always been physical transfer of value, right? You give somebody a coin, give somebody a note, give somebody a bar of gold. And even until, you know, most recently, even with credit cards, I'd say that's a pseudo financial privacy, right? The credit card company knows about it. Of course, any legal authority can request that information, but still the world at large doesn't know it. For me, it's about we're really just at the precipice, at the doorway of entering into this digital metaverse. Right. We're already here, and everybody in crypto are basically in it. And with everything, just like everyone has said so far, everything is built for now. Majority of crypto is built publicly. And going forward, that is going to be a problem because everything can be tracked so easily. And I think that for safety's sake, right, whether it is your opinion of what you want, how you want to spend your money, whether, you know, you're donating to a political party, you're donating to a social movement, you're attending a social movement, you're buying a certain type of product, all that is so easily tracked. And, governments aside, right, for-profit companies can easily track where your funds come from and where your funds go to and know what you are, what you like, what your tastes are, what's going on in your life. And I mean, more easily than what Facebook and Google are doing right now, because as I've been saying before, Facebook and Google track where you go online. You may or may not make a purchase, but you're just staying on that page for 5 minutes, versus this is you actually spending money. And when you spend money, that's a stronger conviction than just reading about something or window shopping online. And I think that, you know, as much as we've been talking about Facebook and Google these days, this is going to be a bigger problem.
So it sounds like, thank you very much for that, Wookie. So it sounds like we've moved from cash, which you know, offers, and gold, like we said, and silver maybe, that offer a certain level of privacy, to, you know, what they call now a cashless society, where, you know, all transactions have moved into the domain of credit cards, which, as you said, are pseudonymous. And now we're sort of bridging over to the blockchain, where we have a completely new situation with tracking, right? With things being very transparent if they don't have any privacy.
Yeah, you're right. Right. Most of blockchain today are all public.
I would just like to, echo what Hashrates was saying, that, you know, of course, like, beyond the personal thing, we also see it as, you know, a bigger picture of, like, the role of the state versus the citizen, right? And there are many countries, especially in Europe, like in Germany, where, despite being a very advanced country, you know, with a very developed financial system, with one of the strongest economies in the world, you find that it is very, very pro-cash. And there's a reason for that, because they see that because you have cash, there is financial privacy. It is not so easy to seize physical cash, because you actually have to go down to you can't really do it on a mass scale. The problem with having with digital money, especially, is not just about privacy, because privacy, also affects seizability, right? Like if I know that, like, for example, blockchain is one thing, but what about, like, you know, with the increasing talks about central bank digital currencies or CBDCs, almost every major economy is talking about CBDCs. And that to me is personally very scary. Like, of course, it may start with good intentions and like, you know, yes, you know, there's little cost to, like, you know, with, you don't have to move physical cash. But what it also means is that the ruling government can basically cut you off from the financial system at will. And if you can see, like, if you go into an authoritarian government, like, how can you mount an opposition to a government that can cut you off your funding? So that to me is like a bit of a dystopian future. I mean, it sounds like a bit like, oh, you know, I'm like a tinfoil hat, but I think it is a very, very real risk, and I think it will happen. I mean, we don't even have to look far, like just what happened in Singapore with the, you know, the COVID vaccination, where there's this trace together thing where you're supposed to, like, you know, submit your location to help people with tracing, and it was supposed to be, you know, privacy focused. They're not going to use anything except for health reasons. Now they've expanded it to allow law enforcement access to it. So there always will be this creep, and I do think that surrendering financial privacy now will lead to creep until to the point that, you know, our money is no longer ours. So yeah, that's all I wanted to add to that.
Okay, so we kind of established that, you know, people in the fiat world right now, they have a level of privacy if they use cash. Once that cash goes into digital format, they kind of lose that privacy level. At least, you know, it's pseudo privacy because, you know, several organizations have access to those records of, you know, transactions and habits of everybody. Now, how are the governments and the corporations invading people's privacy right now? And how, you know, maybe more interesting, are they going to do it or planning to do it once blockchain establishes itself maybe as the new financial system?
It's a funny dichotomy, isn't it? You know, the power of blockchain and the transparency of this open ledger gives it, that is the power. But at the same time, now it's also the curse, right? If especially here in the United States, is the IRS, and they recognize that this $1 trillion thing called Bitcoin is actually for real and not going away, you know, they're starting with FATCA and other financial compliance issues here with Coinbase and Gemini, these exchanges, complete KYC, on-exchange KYC, which means wallet KYC, and it means off-exchange wallet KYC. And the minute they have your wallet and they know the address, they can then track every single transaction you ever did. So in a way, it's while it has been an amazing thing to watch, at this point in time, it's the dream of the state, because now they can see everything that you do, and there is no privacy provided if they once they get that wallet address. You know, you have coins like, I'd like to hear from the team here, coins like Monero, and you know, you've got the pirate R coin here, which is private, and having transparent addresses and all that. And again, my point is not to say, oh, we're trying to hide money or money laundering, or we're all terrorists here trying to fund, you know, subversive causes. It's just that how are we as an organization or as a community of cryptocurrency folks, how do we go ahead and maintain our privacy going forward? Because you will have disclosure statements, particularly here in the United States. And then furthermore, which I'd like to point out is, and this is really, I think, an interesting thing to think about, is, okay, we have Pirate Chain, we've got Zcoin or Zcash or whatever, we've got Monero, but in the IRS form here in the US, at least for our government form, if you lie on that form, it's a crime. So if they ask you, do you have a wallet address, and you don't tell them, or you say, no, you don't have cryptocurrency, that is a crime. And people go to jail for lying on that form. It's funny enough, you can steal money on your tax form, or you can do bad deductions or write things off that you don't have, and you pay a tax penalty. But if you don't tell the truth on the form, so we may technically be able to, quote, hide our wallets or hide our transactions. But what happens when we sign something every day that says, or every year that says, I'm disclosing my financial X, Y, and Z to you? So technical privacy is going to be much different for us going forward than, let's say, legal privacy. I'd like to hear people comment on that.
So on question what corporations and governments are doing right now, I think the most scary thing is that we don't even know, right? So usually we know about some things in best case like a few years after, right? So in regards with Snowden revelations and so on, so it was about that. And so, yeah, the worst thing is that we don't even know what they're doing right now.
One quick thing I just wanted to add was, right, coming back to governments, I guess a broader sense is I've, you know, just felt like governments should be working for the people as opposed to people working for the government, right? If we should retain the power or the rights to what we have and what we say, and we should, and we should be given the benefit of the doubt, is what I'm trying to say. You know, we should have the opportunity. Well, everything I feel like should be privacy first, privacy by default, with the option to opt out. And we should be given the benefit of the doubt that we will disclose truthfully, as opposed to the other way around now, where we have to disclose everything, which, you know, any rightful citizen should do. But if we don't, then, you know, if we make a mistake or if we don't, then we are heavily penalized.
I think one of the things that, you know, I mean, if this relates to, you know, how governments and corporations are invading people's privacy, I think in particular, the recent draft cryptocurrency guidance by the FATF, which is the Financial Action Task Force, is actually pretty worrying. So just to give some background for those of you who aren't aware of the FATF, it's not, you know, it's a global intergovernmental organization. Its membership includes most major nation states and the EU. And it has the power to issue very, very powerful guidance. And although it's not binding, if you do not comply with them, you can be placed into a blacklist, which has economic ramifications, because they will say that, oh, you know, you're a country that does not really take the right steps to prevent against money laundering and stuff like that. So previously, what they were saying is that they were introducing the idea of the travel rule. And the travel rule basically means that when you are transferring money from one regulated entity to another regulated entity, mostly custodians, you will have to disclose who this money came from. And, you know, I know some are like privacy purists and say, oh, yeah, I know there should be no disclosure. But, you know, for entities that hold other people's money, like as custodian or like a bank, I'm personally, I'm quite okay with that, because they need to know who we are. I mean, if the bank knows who I am, I don't think it's possible to say like the bank doesn't know who I am. So they say that if you are transacting from one custodian to another, you have to give details of who this transaction came from. The new rules actually now seem to expand that to even include non-custodian types. So if you're multi-sig, now you are considered like a custodian as well. Or maybe if you're a Lightning Node operator, now you have like surveillance obligations as well. And that to me is very scary. And they, even in the guidelines itself, it specifically talks about privacy mechanisms and P2P mechanisms. And they strongly, they say, if the exchanges think that they are, you know, they may completely ban P2P transactions. You know, maybe now you always have to go through KYC wallets, or you should also not allow any sort of privacy transactions or privacy supported cryptocurrencies. And this is really scary. Of course, these are just like suggestions, but they set the tone. And most countries, and like we've taken a look at what happened to South Korea, Japan, they're just like, oh, yeah, we're just going to apply all of this because, you know, we don't want to deal with it, and, you know, privacy is bad. So I think this is something that is really, really is happening right now, and there is a public comment period until the April the 20th. And if this passes, this is going to be really bad, not just for privacy coins. Privacy coins would get particularly hit, but even DeFi ecosystems, even the Lightning Network, all of this will be affected. And this is something that's happening right now that we really, as the BPSAA, should really, really maybe look into getting one of the comments in, or, you know, like donating to Coin Center, who has a great, does great lobbying on behalf of the entire industry. Sorry to take up so much time, but it was really important because this is happening right now. Yeah.
Oh, no, not at
Ruben,
all.
That, that's very well put. You know, a lot of the people in the crypto world that I talk to, like, let's say the crypto purists, are like, oh, we'll just use crypto for everything. But that's not the real world. And I had actually posted something here on the BPSA chat the other day. The guy that ran BitMEX, they picked him up in Honolulu, right? And he's living in Singapore, and he's under arrest for KYC issues for BitMEX, right? So for people to say, oh, we'll just go ahead and ignore this, we're going to be fine, and we're just going to hide. I mean, that's not the reality of the world we're living in. And I think the point is, if we don't start speaking up, they're just going to railroad us or run us over with legislation. And, you know, you can try to avoid it, but the point is, it's going to happen. And so we should try to get in front of it.
Okay, to circle it back a little bit, we're discussing here, you know, why, you know, financial privacy is important. And I think, you know, we haven't clarified before, you know, why it is so important, you know, in blockchain in particular. Does somebody want to go, you know, very briefly into how, you know, financial privacy is compromised when dealing with blockchain projects that do not have it incorporated in them?
Well, I guess I'll just quickly answer that one. I'll give my opinion. So, right, I guess the basic thing for starters is most blockchains are transparent. So, although the addresses are pseudonymous, but for most people nowadays, and at least within the foreseeable future, everybody enters through a fiat entry point. And anybody with the means, and certainly with the legal authority to can track that to your fiat on-ramp or off-ramp and know who you are. But then within blockchain itself, there was a good summary yesterday on a YouTube interview with Crypto Rich. Sorry, that, many of these, the privacy coins out there that have been thought to be private, right, and are still today being touted to be private, are actually not, because of companies, right, like Chainalysis and CipherTrace, that whose mission, whose mandate, and of course they have said that their customers are, you know, government organizations that have engaged them to track, to break the code, or figure out a way to track these so-called private cryptocurrencies. And that brings me to the point of optional privacy, right? And the issue with these that have been tracked, I'll just say them most notably, you know, it's Zcash. And then there's another one that's talked about, Monero, but that's still a little up in the air, it seems. They were able to track Zcash because of the optional privacy. So I believe, in my opinion, you know, every currency that wants to be private needs to be private by default, so as to create a complete and closed system without any leaks.
Okay, so that's a very good point, Wookin. Thank you for that explanation. So apart from the factor of the privacy factor, where, you know, as we said, you know, financial institution, you know, governments, you know, organizations that, you know, have an interest in you know, peeking at our financial records, apart from those, you know, lack of financial privacy does pose also a security issue, doesn't it? Because if others or, you know, or many others are able to trace, you know, how many funds you have, then that puts you quite immediately at risk, right?
Yeah, and even worse, we don't know who are the rogue actors, right? So if, for example, government is able to track public blockchain, then yeah, it's public. So then potentially any actor can do the same, right? So it's more or less the same logic as in case of government injected backdoors, right? So like any hacker can use a backdoor potentially, and here, so any actor with proper tools for analysis can do analysis of public blockchain. So then, yeah, if privacy is totally compromised, then yes, security is likely also, and even worse, you don't know even about attack vectors, right? Because you don't even know who are actors behind those attacks, right? But yeah, if privacy is compromised, then security also, definitely.
Okay, thank you. I mean, that's I think a very good point to make. And the next question is how do privacy projects in the crypto space, you know, solve this situation of, you know, not having privacy, you know, having traceability, you know, official and unofficial actors being able to access, you know, how many funds you are, you know, potentially where you are, if you know, they correlate, you know, data from social analysis and other data points that they have available. So how do privacy projects, you know, protect users from all of these bad things happening to them?
You're talking on a technical level or?
Yes, I assume both on a technical level and on an educational level, I guess.
I think it's quite simple. I mean, any good privacy project worth their salt tries to do a few things. I guess, in my opinion, the most important thing is to hide the transaction graph. And what that means is try to hide, like, if A transfers to B, transfers to C, that's the flow of funds. So we are trying to hide, like, you know, showing that A transfer to B. We're trying to hide the flow of the transaction. That's the first thing. The second thing would be the amounts that are being transacted. That's another thing that we're trying to hide. The other thing is that, you know, what we call receiver privacy, you know, whether someone can publish an address publicly and people don't know when he's receiving something. And the last one would, I guess, be on like a metadata or network layer, that when I analyze the network, not just on the blockchain, but on the network layer or any other outside information, I wouldn't be able to tie, let's say, an IP address with a particular transaction, because you can have like the most private, like, you know, transactional model, but if I can tie this transaction to a particular IP address, there goes a lot of the privacy. So I guess on a technical level, these are the stuff that what privacy projects like ours try to solve. Yeah.
Thank you for those thoughts. I mean, the next question, I guess, is a very, very big one. And obviously, you know, it's a point of contention amongst privacy coins in the industry. And that is, should everything be private?
Yeah, let me try to answer. Because I'm co-developer in Ergo, which is not a privacy coin, right? But we have some advanced tools for privacy. Ideally, it would be good to have complete privacy, right? But then we are losing usually about contractual capabilities of the blockchain, right? So it's quite not feasible with current state of cryptography to do powerful contracts and also complete privacy. And even more often it's and even more usually it's hard to formalize privacy, right? for such non-trivial cases. Even more, it's hard to formalize privacy leaks even for a simple case often. So you need to choose some balance, right? If you want to have we are willing to have an ergo, money enriched with powerful contracts or contractual money, in this case, you cannot have complete privacy with current state of cryptography. You need to achieve as much privacy as possible. Right, so it's quite complicated game, and if we are talking about privacy coins, so a lot of things to consider here, like security assumptions, right? Whether they are convincing. Is it okay if like five professors in the world just understand math behind crypto used, and so on. So a lot of tricky choices for both privacy and non-privacy coins.
Is it feasible to have things such as rich lists? I mean, it fascinates me how you can actually go to a project, and in some projects, actually, you know, people use their actual names as well, their real names, and there is a list of all the people that have the majority of the coins in that project. I mean, is that, does that not sound like, you know, the bank releases, you know, a statement in which includes the biggest, you know, depositors in that bank, and puts it in the front door so everybody walking in can see it? Isn't that a weird concept in blockchain?
It may be weird, but at least it's your choice, right? I mean, if you decide to publish your wallet, it's your choice versus them forcing you to do it. Not necessarily know if it's a good idea, but at least I would think it's not done without somebody's bequest.
Let me sort of, I guess this is the question of like, should everything be private, right? And just for the record, currently our official wallets are private by default, but there you can still opt out and use transparent transactions. We are trying to move to a mandatory model, but there are certain reasons why we can't do it straight away. And I think there are also certain cases where it does help not to be private. And we have to be realistic in this situation because, for example, I'm not going to quote names, but I think there is benefit to knowing how much exchanges have inside their internal like core wallets and stuff like that. It is also important to know about the flow of transactions into these entities as well. Because remember, they are holding on behalf of their customers. And there has been many cases where exchanges do not act as honestly as they can be. They have like misled, or like, you know, they siphon funds out, or they're using customer funds to do something else. This actually can be found out if the exchange is using the transparent layer and they can process a lot of transactions at once. So I do think, I mean, we have gone through like personal experience where the exchange would not just like does not want to destroy it like hacked funds. They just keep it there in the limbo and suddenly it gets moved somewhere. At least we can see that and ask them the question, right? If it was totally private, it'd be really hard to do that. I'm not arguing that we should have, option. Like, I'm not saying that mandatory privacy is not bad, but in certain situations, it can be very useful. And as Kushti said, like a lot of the interoperability solutions right now rely on transparent transactions. I mean, maybe we'll come to a day, maybe like a few years from now, that we will find ways to do interactivity with other blockchains without this privacy stuff. But privacy is really hard, especially when you're doing cross-chain stuff. So I do think, like, if you believe in a world where multiple blockchains serve its purpose, and that's my personal belief, like, I don't think one blockchain can do it all, and it shouldn't do it all, because You know, there are different sets of trade-offs. And interoperability generally requires some sort of transparent layer, at least with the current state of art. And right now, like also for us, like for example, Lelantis is a new privacy protocol that we came up with. We are taking a phased approach with it because it's such a new cryptography that there are risks involved. And if we just went totally private, you know, I mean, we just recently had an issue where even though we were audited by Trail of Bits, like, you know, the best audit company, there was an issue with it. And because we had that sort of a transparent layer, we could actually detect certain amounts. Obviously, as the protocol matures, we should move to a mandatory privacy model while trying to, you know, keep as much interoperability. But I don't think, it's not wrong to have mandatory privacy, but there are also certain benefits of keeping that transparent layer for certain things. So that's my two cents.
I just want to quickly add also, I think, certain entities, organizations that basically serve, right, provide a service for people should be public. Exchanges was one good example. You know, coming back to governmental organizations, you know, maybe the the army, the military doesn't need to tell the whole world they spend how much on every missile or whatever. But like at a local level, you know, local municipalities, that you pay tax into, you know, they should be held accountable for how much they spend on water treatment, how much they spend on this service and that service, because that is something that directly serves the people. That's just my add-on for what should be public.
Oh, absolutely, right. But what happens right now is actually the opposite. The government hides, you know, where it spends its money, but expects people to be, you know, 100% transparent where they spend theirs. So it, you know, it feels like a very imbalanced situation at the moment. Now, the next question I had was, should all blockchain projects introduce a level of privacy, or are things okay as they are right now? I mean, let's say that right now there are, you know, governmental actors, and there's also a couple of companies private who have invested time and effort in tracing people's transactions on the blockchain across pretty much all chains and correlating that information for, you know, whatever their purposes are, which, as Kushti said, we don't know. But what if, you know, somebody leaks a program soon that, you know, the same program that these companies use that allows you to pinpoint, you know, where the people are that are certain owners of, you know, certain wallets? You know, should every project be looking into integrating some privacy? I mean, there's even talks in the Bitcoin community about that, but, you know, it's very, very faint. Is that something that everybody should be doing?
I think it really depends what your project is about, right? I mean, it is unfortunate that, like, if you seek to be a currency, I would say yes, you know, definitely there should be an element of privacy. And it's very unfortunate that Bitcoin seems to be placing all their hopes on the Lightning Network, which is a very hub and spoke model. And, you know, if now Lightning nodes have to become like a VASP under the FATF, that's going to be really worrying. And, you know, people saying that, oh, Taproot's going to solve everything, it's literally like you're naked, but that putting a sticker on your nipple and saying that, yeah, this is an improvement on my privacy, technically it is, but it isn't. But let's say, like, you know, if your blockchain's about, you know, supply chain tracking or something else like that, I don't think everything has to be private. It really depends on your use case. But if you're a currency, you know, or, you know, I do think that should be the case. But maybe if you're a governance token, you know, as we have seen in many, many new DeFi projects, maybe you don't really need privacy there. So, yeah, that's just my two cents.
I agree. There are also projects that are, you know, software service projects built entirely based on being able to track addresses. And, you know, I mean, those just cannot afford to be private at all. But I think that where exactly as Ruben said, that I agree, where we draw the line should be currencies, right? That I think of all of crypto, that is probably that. And the new thing about, well, not new, the thing about identity tokens, those two things I think are closest to, to humanity that should be private.
NFTs.
No, but
please go ahead, Kushti.
My point is that all the public blockchains are about monies, in my opinion. Then, yeah, all the public blockchains should be worried about maximizing privacy.
Thank you. That's pretty clear. Is there any additional things that you guys think that are needed to be completely private in blockchain? And what does the future look like for financial privacy in general in fiat and financial privacy in crypto as we're currently, you know, going into the near future?
My takeaway would be that technical privacy and regulatory privacy are absolutely two different animals.
So they have to be treated in a different way and with lots of
without care. Question. I mean, I think that the technology that we have at the BPSAA and the teams that we have and the coins and the blockchains we have, I think that everybody's really doing an excellent job on the technical side, but I don't think that that's the battle ahead. I think the battle that we have ahead is regulatory. Like Ruben talked about, the travel rule and the FATCA rules, these are the things, whether it's in the United States or even globally, these are where the battle has to be. And I think, you know, again, from a business perspective in business development, which is my focus in life, the BPSAA, that's where we're going to be fighting our battles. While we may be all computer savvy and have great technology, I think that the what this organization is going to have to take a leadership position in is really focusing on the regulatory battles. And it's not just the United States. For example, you know, it was Switzerland and the Netherlands of all places that actually started off-chain KYC for wallets and custodial wallet reporting last year. The United States does not have that yet. They will be forcing Coinbase and Gemini and others to actually have, when you go to send your money off outside the exchange to an off exchange wallet, they will start requiring KYC at some point. But that's already in place in the Netherlands and Switzerland. So it just isn't the United States. And I think that's really going to be the challenge. The technology and legal compliance are going to be two different battles.
Yeah, I think Netherlands and I think Australia and a couple of other countries have totally, they have had pressure from the regulators to delist all privacy coins. And I mean, like, I'm quite surprised. Like, I would have expected that from, like, you know, Asian countries, but I was pretty surprised that, you know, Australia and Netherlands just, like, you know, killed over so easily. And that's kind of unfortunate.
So can I like to ask, maybe ask the group. I've been having conversations recently with some of these second layer privacy networks, but that doesn't matter. It's the idea that, you know, should we, right, I think everybody agrees that we need to change the narrative on privacy. And you say the word privacy to any, you know, Joe Blow on the street, and the first thing they think of, it's because they've been brainwashed all these years that, you know, it's something nefarious. Should we be changing, A, you know, how can we change the narrative? B, should this be from the government point of view or more of like a hearts and minds, change the mindset of, you know, from the people up? Anybody have
This is actually something that I've been thinking about a lot. And I don't have an answer yet, because obviously, like, you know, it's fine to preach about privacy and like, oh yeah, you know, the governments are like the big brother's gonna get us and stuff like that. And it's all very negative. It's very tinfoil hat. Like, yes, we're not tinfoil hat people, but we sound like it, you know, like, oh, if we don't protect our privacy, this is going to happen to you, this is going to happen to you. And it's not a fun message. And obviously some people, yeah, privacy is serious stuff. But this makes it very, very unapproachable. I mean, our world is kind of like shitty as it is, you know? And I feel that we have to somehow approach privacy in a way that is also fun, not just about, oh, you know, like someone's going to get us, or like, you know, the government's trying to screw us over. Because that's a very negative way to view it. So I feel that, yes, as you said, there is already a negative implication about privacy, but privacy should also be fun. I'm trying to think about ways to make this fun, because, like, you know, you may talk crap about what's happening in DeFi and saying that's all a bunch of rubbish, but there's a lot of stuff that they do right, like you know, like food tokens and stuff. Yes, it sounds rubbish, but it is fun. Or like, you know, like even like Tari with their sort of like fancy emoticon addresses. It's fun. And I'm trying to find a way to change that messaging to not just be about, oh, protecting ourselves, you know, we're going to get controlled by the government, or we're going to get robbed, into something a bit more that people can relate to and that people feel it as a challenge to protect themselves. But I don't have an answer yet, but I'm keen to hear what everyone else has to say about that.
Well, freedom is fun. Freedom is very much fun. It's probably the most fun of them all.
So I just want to chime in quickly to what Ruben just said. Right, I completely agree. I think I personally, I just don't like to approach things from a punitive or a negative point of view, right? That starts out with the wrong sentiment, with the wrong mindset, and that is more fear-based. I think it should be approached from a positive point of view, as in this is something of yours that you should treasure, right? Everybody's privacy, I mean. And then as far as the government side of it, Big Brother, of course, is one big argument. The way I think about it is also, you know, a lot of governments, you know, act, well, I guess at least the US government, or the Western world government, act based on lobbying pressures, right? And that's where money talks. And I think from the ground up, grassroots it needs a big social movement to exert the pressure all the way back up to it for the people's opinion to change policies. I don't think governments on their own are going to say, hey, we want to protect people's privacy, and so let's just, you know, change everything. It needs to, my personal opinion is, it needs to come from the grassroots, and this is going to take decades. Decades to change. That's all.
One thing I would like to actually add is that, because as a space, as a privacy coin space, we aren't big. And from a business point of view, many exchanges can delist all privacy coins and be like, it doesn't really affect my bottom line. And that's unfortunately the reality of them, because the exchanges have to say that, oh yeah, you know, am I going to add on the additional regulatory costs and legal costs of like defending its privacy coins and putting my exchange under scrutiny, even though I may like privacy, but from a business point of view, I'm going to delist privacy coins because we as a sector are too small. And that's why it is really sad, because like, let's say if Bitcoin and like, you know, Ethereum and all this like large things start taking privacy seriously, because maybe that means that we're all out of a job, because then, well, you know, what's the point of our chain then? But it also makes it, I think there's something that Roger Ver say, and I know Roger Ver is a very polarizing figure, but I think he was right that the best way to protect like Bitcoin or any cryptocurrency is to grow so big that regulation has to regulate around us, rather than you know, we seek like, you know, regulatory clarity. Like we become so big, like take a look at what happened with Airbnb and Uber. Like if they just played strictly by the rules and asked the like regulation, or if like Satoshi said, hey, you know, can I create Bitcoin? I think the answer would be no, right? So the why Bitcoin has succeeded because it has grown so big that it becomes very difficult to control effectively. And hopefully, you know, privacy projects would eventually grow to that size. I mean, right now, we only have Monero, and then like Zcash is quite like far behind, and everyone else, like as a whole sector, we are very small. And if exchanges delist us or like people don't use us, people don't feel it. So hopefully, you know, people value us and see it, but it is an uphill battle for us. Yeah.
Hey, Ruben, you know, the one thing, of course, from a technical standpoint, putting on my fun crypto hat, and that is the advent of DEXs, right? I mean, if I was Binance or Coinbase, I mean, they've got big business model taking on the world. But, I mean, everybody's looking at DEXs. So I think it'd be interesting to see as the technology evolves where, you know, for example, at Ether One, we now have got we have our tokens wrapped over on Binance. We have them on SushiSwap. So we're wrapping tokens, not exactly private, that's for sure. But maybe there will be some type of privacy DEX or cross-chain ability where you can go ahead and you can have liquidity without not having to get registered in an exchange. I think that those type of solutions will happen quicker than the regulatory environment. You know, I think that the people will figure out a way around it as you go to Coinbase or you go somewhere else and you say, oh, by the way, you can't send your money to that wallet. Do you give us the guy's passport, right?
Yep. But if you take a look at the FATF, they're also starting to target DEX developers potentially, and that would be really bad as well. Yeah.
I was going to just quickly add my little quick. I often like to say governments coerce and money persuades, right? So like you were saying about Bitcoin, you know, it eventually became too big to fail. And so it's something that has to be worked with as opposed to enforced.
So it sounds like adoption is quite a critical element here, isn't it? So the more people adopt, you know, privacy coins and embrace privacy as part of something that they need to have in their lives, you know, the more the potential for, you know, for a better future.
Definitely. And I think this is unfortunately, I think, you know, Pirate Chain has experienced this firsthand. Like it does require additional work for exchanges to integrate like Z2Z exchanges, and kudos to the exchanges that do it. But, you know, they are very few and far between. They're going to put it quite low priority, and that also hurts adoption, right? So, I mean, I understand why, like, there is a purist view, like, yeah, we're going to have a no compromises approach, and that is admirable. And Monero went down that path, and they were very lucky because they were kind of alone in the privacy space. There wasn't really any other competition. I wouldn't even call, like, Darkcoin or Dash a privacy coin, and so they became big enough so that they could get exchanges to adopt them, right? But it was by no means easy. And we, you know, now as a smaller project, it is a big question whether people would adopt us. Like, take a look at Grin. You know, Binance wouldn't list Grin that easily because of the addressing system with their interactivity and all of that. They're like, they're too small, I can't be bothered, right? So this is something that's really real. We have a no compromise approach. We have everything private and make it not that easy for exchanges to integrate. Then, you know, we may be pure, but then we may be small and just fade into non-existence. And this is something that it's an existential crisis for privacy coins. It's a really hard road to navigate. And so, you know, kudos to Pirate Chain for taking the no compromises approach, but it is really hard. Like even for us, we would like to get there, but we are also realistic as to, like, you know, whether this will happen or not. And hopefully, as Hashrates said, like, you know, DEXs become the main way so that we don't have to be beholden to all this stuff.
Okay, fantastic. Well, any closing thoughts from anybody else on everything that we have discussed and beyond?
All right. So concluding a little bit, privacy is very important. And yeah, privacy is also about security after all, right? And yeah, privacy is hard, but we need to work towards that.
If no one else is saying, you know, I do think privacy, blockchain privacy protocols are some of the toughest problems to solve because we are essentially trying, like, a blockchain is meant to be transparent in nature, and we are trying to and globally verifiable. Adding privacy to that is not an easy time. How do you make something transparent yet private at the same time? And I do think that there is not enough, there aren't enough privacy projects that try to pursue different ways to approach privacy. I mean, right now we have, you know, everyone's using like ring signatures, and then there's Zcash technology, then there's our Lelantis technology, and there's like Mimblewimble. And that's kind of it. I mean, yes, you have different ZK Snarks variants and stuff like that. But there hasn't been, I feel that we, none of us have reached that sort of holy grail of what privacy tech should be. So I really hope that, you know, projects can work together, especially in research tasks. And we'll be having a very exciting announcement on that soon. But yeah, just wanted to say that there should be more collaborative privacy research between the privacy projects. Yeah.
So I guess I have two things. I've often wondered, I mean, a lot in crypto are, you know, is very tribalistic. Everybody fights everybody. I guess for a while we've been posting hashtag, you know, privacy projects unite. Like you said, we're all, you know, this whole sector, we're the fringe of the fringe, right? Crypto, although not really truly fringe these days, but still broadly can be considered fringe, but we're the fringe of the fringe. Perhaps, you know, all the privacy projects can work together. And I think that, you know, privacy does have a lot of roadblocks ahead of us, but I also do think that the conversation to be had is coming very soon, and it is something that will become inevitable.
And I think this is one of the main reasons the PPSA was formed as well, because, you know, we recognized that there was a need for more oversight in regards to privacy, security, and, you know, the adoption efforts that are happening in this area as well in the blockchain space. So it's something that essentially, you know, is essential, and, you know, working all towards it makes it more sense because, you know, as you said, we're the fringe of the fringe. So uniting, you know, the few powers we have together, you know, could mean that we all reach the targets we so, you know, need faster.
Yeah, we all competitors, but we also all are in the same boat. And, you know, one thing that maybe the BPSA can do is maybe we can all collaborate on finding a DEX that we can all be tradable on, you know, like we all, because the problem with DEXs is like it's all fragmented, everything's here and there. If we can find like a good project where we can just say that, yep, you know, we're going to concentrate as a whole body, all these blockchains, we're going to support this DEX, you know, that would be interesting.
Yeah, that would be great. A DEX that's specific for privacy points, and a true DEX, not a pseudo DEX.
True DEX is quite important, right? But we can cover this in a sort of in the next segment. Well, I hope that we covered sort of most of the ground that we wanted to cover today. I want to thank everybody for coming in, especially Ruben, and obviously, you know, all the other guys from the BPSA. It was a pleasure talking to you guys.
Thanks for doing it. Yeah. Great job, Tim.
Thanks, Tim. Yeah.
It was a nice. I enjoyed this chat, roundtable chat with everybody. Thank you all for taking time.
Thank you, guys. Bye.